argue, resist, or fight. 3. You have the right to remain silent. 4. You have the right to speak to a lawyer and don't sign anything until you discuss it with a lawyer. 5. If at home, you have the right to refuse entry unless presented with a judicial warrant signed by a judge. An ICE warrant does not allow entry into your home. 6. You have the right to an interpreter. WPFW, defending hard-won human rights, building a more just world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Watch and comment for Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Dave Raven. It's great to be with you. Hope you're staying warm. And in honor of Black History Month, I thought we would look at the historic sit-in at the Greensboro, North Carolina Woolworth lunch counter store in 1960. You might have heard of it. Those of us that are old enough knew about it, and hopefully the youngins know about it. But then I discovered that there was a similar sit-in in Baltimore 5 years earlier. And joining us to talk about that sit-in and desegregation efforts in the 50s and 60s in Baltimore are longtime activists Leo Burrows and historian Amy Nathan, author of Round and Round Together, Taking a Merry-Go-Round Ride into the Civil Rights Movement. Welcome to both of you. It's great to have you.
Hi, good to be here.
Are you with us, Leo?
Rising, my friends, Grand Rising. I'm glad to be with you.
Hello, Leo. It's good to see you again.
You're in different places, but I'm kind of thinking that Amy and Leo know each other.
Right.
Yes, we do.
and we're going to try and squeeze in callers. We've got fundraising to do, but it would be wonderful if someone wants to chime in. You know, we have a similar situation, I think, back in the 60s in D.C. with integration and segregation at an amusement park here. I'm sure you guys know about that, and we're going to have to do another show on that. I mean, there's so much extraordinary history, and we obviously shouldn't limit it to Black History Month, but it's important to cover, and it's important to remember, and it has relevance that we're going to get to later in the show for what we should do now in the face of, you know, a racist administration that's just come in Washington. I don't use that term lightly, but I think it's appropriate. I mean, this whole attack on DEI, and there's going to be other attacks, like I think, for example, Head Start's going to be in serious trouble soon enough, and other programs that are very important to all of us are going to be under attack. And I want to hear input from Amy and Leo on their advice with their sense of history about what we should do now. But we do want to hear from callers if we have a chance, 202-588-0893. But first, we are in fundraising mode, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Aralia Valencia, a.k.a. Ray. How are ya?
Good morning. We're doing well, and it's that time of year again that we're reaching out to our listeners. We want to thank you so much for joining us, and I can't tell you how important this is right now, supporting WPFW. We are all stakeholders in this community project. We are a community-based radio. We are covering, like David's talking about, the new Trump administration and what it means for us living here in the nation's capital, here in the DMV. So many people that we know either work for the federal government or are somehow part of this place. And so it's going to have ripple effects, what's happening downtown right now. So we want to provide, like, a source of good information for you, a local from your perspective. We're all stakeholders in this, and we just really need your help right now. So anything you could offer, I know we're just coming off the holidays, but you know, this is really an important time. We have to move our offices. We have to keep the lights on. And if you could just join us and just donate a little bit, that would make a big difference. Sustainers are really important. Just a little bit each month. You know, the amount that you would spend on, you know, a subscription you're not even using anymore, you can unload. But David, could you tell people how to reach out to us?
I certainly can. You can. The easiest way is just to go online, wpfwfm.org. If you just Google WPFW, you'll find it. We are more than happy to take your credit card, your debit card, PayPal. The pledge line, if you want to do it that way and you want to call it, 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739. We've also got a Cash App option, $WPFWFM. And you can also, this is a new way to support the station. You can text WPFWFM to 801-801. That's via text WPFWFM to 801-801. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. We would really appreciate your support, particularly given that we've just moved. It's expensive to do that. We're going in the right direction and moving, but it costs the do-re-mi, if you will, and we really need your help with that. And I think, you know, it's important to remember that this is tax-deductible donation. Tax day is coming up April 15th, I believe. You know, unless Elon Musk, you know, screws things up with the IRS, I think he just got access to our personal data at the IRS. But I believe the date is still April 15th, and your donation is tax deductible. So please chime in and hopefully I'll keep our dogs from chiming in as well here. I might have to move. But we appreciate your support so much, particularly given that, you know, it's undoubtedly the question that public radio, public television, including WPFW, is going to be and is under attack by this very dangerous new administration in the White House. So please show your support at WPFWFM.org, or you can call in 202-588-9739. And I think I've done enough with the fundraising, and let's get on with our important show. We're speaking with Amy Nathan, author of Round and Round Together, Taking a Merry-Go-Round Ride into the Civil Rights Movement, and longtime activist who was there on the ground starting in the 60s, Leo Burrows. So Amy Nathan, if you could set the context for what was going on in the 1950s in Baltimore, and this I guess it was rather impromptu, but successful sit-in strike, if you will, at Reed's Drugstore in downtown Baltimore.
Right. Well, those protests had started actually two years earlier in 1953, when the group CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, established a Baltimore chapter. And they were great devotees of the Gandhian strategies of protest, and believed in nonviolent protest. And so they started, it was an interracial group at that time of people in Baltimore. And they started with first seeing which lunch counters were segregated. Lunch counters were sort of like the fast food restaurants of the 1950s, a place where you could go in and get a quick meal. But many of them were segregated. They would allow Black people to come in and buy stuff, but they couldn't sit at the lunch counters and have a snack or something to eat. So they first tried a group in 1953, Kresge's store, and they started by talking to the managers, and then they wrote a letter to the national managers of Kresge's, and they then contacted the local Baltimore managers of Kresge's and said, you really should drop segregation. And so they did. So they didn't even have to do any protests to get that one dropped. And they did, then they told Woolworths that Kresge's had dropped segregation. So Woolworths followed suit and dropped segregation. So then they tried some others. And in some of the other cases, they did have to go and do some sit-ins. But they had desegregated several drugstores and small stores in Baltimore by 1955. But there was one drugstore that just wouldn't give in, and that was Reed's drugstores. And this was also a target of Morgan State College students who a shopping center directly across from the Morgan campus, there was a Reed's, and Morgan students began doing sit-ins and protests there, but with no success until this wonderful example in December, in January of 1955, when Helena Hicks and a few other Morgan students were downtown Baltimore, and they were cold, it was cold, and they decided, well, why don't we go in and do a sit-in at the Reed's right here, we can get warmed up. And so they went in, and of course they didn't get served, and they were not interested in getting arrested because, as Helena Hicks said later, they had to get back to Morgan and go to class. So they just stayed there for about 20 minutes. They were not served and they left. And then follow-up from core members and also from officials at Morgan to the Reed's drugstore wound up shortly thereafter. Reed's dropped segregation not only at the downtown store, but at all Reed's all over Baltimore. So This was an important step forward in Baltimore, but it was largely forgotten until the 2000s when the mayor of Baltimore wanted to rip down the Reed's building in downtown Baltimore and put up some sort of special new structure. And Helena Hicks and people who were at that protest at that store protested and said this was an important symbol of the whole civil rights struggle in Baltimore, and they wanted to preserve it. And so they wound up, I think, and Leo may correct me because I don't actually live in Baltimore anymore, so I'm not up to the day-to-day occurrences, but I think they prevented them from ripping the building down. They put up a historical marker there to memorialize the students' protest there, and I think the building sits empty. Is that right, Leo?
It's still vacant at this time.
Yeah.
It's a vacant structure and projected for future uses, but at this point in time, it's vacant as best I can determine.
Right. That does.
Yeah.
But it was a milestone in civil rights history in Baltimore.
I mean, it's interesting that I'm relatively aware of the history of the civil rights movement. I'm as I said in the introduction, I'm checking out doing the Woolworths lunch counters sit-in in 1960, and I went, wait a minute, there was this Reed drugstore sit-in in 1955, and I didn't even know about it, and I'm wondering maybe Leo. Burroughs, longtime activist, your thoughts about why I didn't know about it. Maybe it's because it was short-lived and very successful. I mean, it was only, 2 days before Reed's drugstore caved after that January sit-down protest. Leo Burroughs, your thoughts about why I didn't know about it?
Well, I don't know. All I can tell you is that Dr. Helena Hicks was just a very well-organized and focused leader in the civil rights struggle, very determined. And I think the time was right for concessions on the part of the established order here, what I call those segregationists who decided that they were going to give a little to make themselves look good in terms of human rights. They were not, they saw it as a tactical advantage, I think, to succumb in that particular situation, that particular store, to being open to folks. Meanwhile, the struggle continued throughout Baltimore City and the state of Maryland in terms of segregation, but that was a footprint, I'll say, in the right direction toward human dignity and human decency. And yeah. That's the best yeah. I could get back from when I had discussions with Dr. Helena Hicks. This is, in essence, what she shared with me.
That she was sort of in the lead. Ms. Hicks, no longer with us, was in the lead in that sit-down movement at the drugstore.
Yeah, and she had been active as a child. Her family was active, and there were protests at Ford Theater, a big where Broadway shows would come. And from 1947 to 1952, people led in large part by NAACP at that time, would have picketing outside of Ford's, and they finally got the actors to Actors' Equity to support the protest, and said we weren't going to send actors there to act anymore unless you end segregation, and so they did. So she was active in that, and she was also involved with a youth group, which was run by Lily Mae Carroll Jackson, who was the leader of the NAACP in Baltimore from 1935 on. But even before that, her daughter, Juanita Jackson, who later was Juanita Jackson Mitchell, and young people organized a protest at stores in the Black neighborhood that wouldn't hire Black workers. And so they had a boycott in 1933, Don't Buy Where You Can't Work. And that succeeded in ending segregation of those stores on Pennsylvania Avenue in the Black community, but had no impact, of course, on getting jobs in downtown Baltimore. But so there was an activist movement in Baltimore, and she, as a young child, had been participating in it. So it's typical that she would do this little on the spur of the moment protest, but also typical also that she said, hey, we got to get back to school and finish classes, because she can, you know, yeah.
I love it. I wish she was around to be on the show today. Would have been an honor and a pleasure to have her on. So Leo Burrows, the students that were involved in that protest in 1955, if I'm not mistaken, all of them or some of them were part of a movement that was led by CORE. If you could talk about CORE, because that's how you eventually, you were a youngin' back in 1955, but that's how you eventually entered into the civil rights movement, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, in actuality, I entered into the fray in 1960. In February of 1960, I graduated from the Frederick Douglass Senior High School in Baltimore City. My intent was, and very successfully, was to attend Morgan State College. And at that time, I became involved with the civic interest group. It was just 3 or 4 months after I entered as a freshman when the civic interest group, under the direction of then Levin West, who was chair of the CIG, an activist civil rights group, started its movement, in consistent with what was happening in Greensboro, North Carolina, and around the country, the sit-in demonstrations that spread throughout the country. And so my life was very much altered in a positive sense in reflection for having been part of the student sit-in demonstrations, becoming a leader under the civic interest group, and at the same time holding leadership position in public relations for both the Congress of Racial Equality, which was under the direction of Walter P. Carter, who was president of the Baltimore City chapter of the Congress of Racial Equality. So I had the distinction of working with both groups and coordinating, assisting in the coordination and leadership of sit-in demonstrations and freedom rides on the eastern shore of Maryland, which encompass Cambridge and Dorchester County and, of course, other areas, Chestertown and all up and down the eastern shore, as well as the boardwalk in Ocean City, Maryland, all of which was segregated. And we were considered undesirable. So the confrontation went on. Nonviolent, yes, we were committed to that as a tactic and strategy, but it was confrontational. And confrontation moves the needle, or moved the needle for us.
Yeah, I mean, extraordinary work. I want to hear more about this Freedom Rides, but let's take a little very quick fundraising break. You're listening to Community Watch and Comment, the Tuesday edition. We really appreciate you listening, and we would really appreciate your financial support. We're in dire straits, as always. We're listener-sponsored. We're working from a different model here, created in 1949. Pacifica was out in Berkeley, and now we are five stations strong and created. We're responsible for democracy now that you are hopefully listening to religiously, you know, not as religiously as you listen to this program, but you know, I think we are Pacifica is the model for NPR. It's the model for PBS, listener-sponsored public media, listener-sponsored Pacifica, WPFW, and we need your support. What do you think, Ray Valencia?
I think we need to dial the phone now. You know, I know people are sitting at home thinking, I've been intending to contribute to the program. I want to do this. I've been wanting to do this. It's been on my list. Well, today's the day. I mean, now is the time to pick up the phone and do this.
Yep.
Please call. We are independent media. We're not legacy media. We're not going to overwhelm you with commercials and just quippy sound bites and trying to corner somebody into a quote. We really want to bring information and context to what is happening, the backdrop is of what is happening here in the DMV. So please, please call us today. Become a sustainer, a little bit every month. That way it's not one big chunk out of your budget. And as David has said, it is a tax-deductible donation, and we so appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Ray. You can do it online, wpfwfm.org, credit card, debit card, PayPal, whatever you can give. Sustainers, as Ray said, are deeply appreciated. You know, for $10 a month, $50 a month, whatever you can give would be so appreciated. I think we are a valuable resource, particularly in these perilous times. If you don't want to go online, the pledge line at 202-588-9739. You can also do Cash App, $WPFWFM. And we have a new way to support the station. You can text us, WPFW-FM to 801-801. So please show the love. No a donation is too large. No a donation is too small. Please show the love for this invaluable, I think we can say, resource, Community Radio WPFW. And let's get back to our esteemed guests. We're speaking with Leo Burrows, longtime activists out of Baltimore, and Amy Nathan, author of Round and Round Together, Taking a Merry-Go-Round Ride into the Civil Rights Movement. And let's go to the headline, if you will, of your important book, in the protest at an amusement park that culminated, I guess, on the important date of August 28, 1963. If you could talk about that movement that was several years long, I believe.
Right, right. It started in 1955, actually, for their first protest, because Baltimore was one of the first, one of the few southern cities that went along with the Brown versus Board of Education. Not in any kind of great overwhelming way, but they did officially end segregation in their public schools. So the idea was, well, if the schools were going to be desegregated, what about the amusement park? And so this amusement park, which was the main amusement park in Baltimore then, just refused to talk about desegregating. So they started protests there, and they were core members who started the protests in 1955, and they really believed in nonviolence and the methods of Gandhi. And so they were very sort of polite about it, and they had just a few demonstrators outside each year, and they really got nowhere with their protests until they had young people like Walter P. Carter, who Leo was talking about, and people like Leo, who joined the movement to desegregate Gwin Oak and began to use a little bit more assertive protest strategies, because they realized that if they weren't going to inflict some economic pain on the amusement park, they weren't going to get anywhere. So they managed to did these protests on a festival called the All Nations Day Festival. Of course, they never invited representatives from Black nations or any African Americans to come to their festival. So they persuaded it in 1961, I think it was, that no embassies would join in the festival. So that would be a significant loss of money for the amusement park. And then they got the Catholic Church to say they would no longer have school parties or, you know, picnics at the amusement park. And that was another loss of funding for the amusement park. And then they had this huge protests in July of 1963 that brought in clergy from Baltimore, Catholic, Jewish and Protestant, and well, also from other parts of the country, came, and it was a huge protest. And they then had negotiations afterwards to figure it out. And Leo Burrows played an important role in making them decide to end segregation there, because he threatened to have more protests, that if they didn't decide soon to end segregation at the park, he was going to organize more massive protests at the park. And so they caved in and they agreed to end segregation on August 28th, 1963.
Which is,
let Leo explain it a little bit more. Was my impression, that Leo was the rabble rouser who made them all sort of get it together and reach a decision.
Take it away, Leo.
I was seen as a maverick, even within the ranks of the civil rights movement. And that's true. I was a hellraiser, and I'm proud of it. I might say there were hundreds and hundreds of arrests during these protest years, especially in 1963. And because we had hundreds of students and adults and clerics, clergy leaders, reverends, ministers, from all faith, willing to go to jail, it was overwhelming for Baltimore County police in terms of housing demonstrators. And we didn't stay in jail long, maybe a day or two, but when we're singing our freedom songs and pushing forward the need for justice and respect, it fell in ways, it didn't fall on deaf ears, but really what it did was catapult us into the limelight nationally and internationally as freedom fighters. So these arrests were very, very effective in terms of forcing the ownership of Gwin Oak Park ultimately to succumb to allowing us to use those facilities on a fair and equitable basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary history. And were you still in college at this time?
Oh yeah, I was in and out of college. I have an honorary doctorate of law degree from Morgan State University today. But I was as a volunteer and later as a paid person for the NAACP and the Urban League, I have had a wonderful career in the civil rights movement. And to that extent, I take my hat off to the continuing struggle as it still pervades today. Remember, all these things were happening simultaneously. The Heck May Company in Baltimore City and the Hutzler's and Stewart's department store, they were still not wanting to serve black folks fairly or equitably. They didn't even want you to try on clothes in those stores for a long time. So that's, again, the sit-in demonstrations and the boycotting attended to that, both at Gwin Oak and Gwin Oak Amusement Park and in Baltimore City, was the bellwether, the centerpiece of the civil rights struggle in Maryland, which, as I said early on, spread to Dorchester County and Talbot County off Route 50 on the eastern shore of Maryland. Those freedom rides was a big deal, with students from the Northern student movement, primarily white students, coming in, joining our struggle. And my job was to coordinate with Major George E. Davidson, who was the field force commander of the Maryland State Police, to coordinate the number of troopers necessary to ensure greater safety for demonstrators. And I was primarily responsible for public relations and television coverage and news coverage as well. So
that, which is terribly important, needless to say.
Yes, indeed.
You're talking about, I want to make sure that people understand you're not doing this, you know, you're courageous, sticking your neck out, but you're part of a movement. I mean, I don't think people quite realize that, you know, like the courageous woman that refuses to give up her seat in Montgomery, she wasn't doing this alone. She was part of a movement, and so were you. If you could just talk about the importance of having the support and the education of being a part of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality.
Yeah, well, it was simultaneous. The Congress of Racial Equality and the Civic Interest Group cooperated, and I was one of the people responsible that ensured coordination and communication, because, again, we were coordinating our efforts to gain the respect that inevitably must come from a fair and equitable society. And as a consequence, those demonstrations spread throughout the city and the state and resulted, and I can attest to this, in 1963 and 64, in the integration of the Maryland State Penitentiaries. The Maryland State Department of Corrections was segregated at the House of Corrections in Jessup's, Maryland, at the Maryland State Penitentiary in Baltimore City, on the road camps, prison camps on the eastern shore of Maryland, all Jim Crow. And to the extent that we were able to put a light, shine a light on the segregation within the prisons themselves, was the extent to which we were able to force William Curran, who was the commissioner of correction, to integrate those facilities while protesting to say they were not segregated. Yes, they were. And many of these things were juggling at the same time. And I'm just so blessed to have been and still continuing to be a part of the struggle.
Yeah. And something else that is important is that these protests succeeded in getting legislation passed. In 1962, Baltimore passed a public accommodations law, and this was largely as a result of people like Leo and others who were having these restaurant sit-ins all along Route 40 up towards the in the northern part of the state, but also on the eastern shore. And then in 1963, Maryland passed a public accommodations law. Now, it only applied to half of the counties. It didn't apply to the eastern shore. But That was a step forward. The Maryland did that before the national government did with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So,
and you've got to give the Afro-American newspaper a great deal of credit under the direction of all of its leaders, particularly Moses Newsom was the editor-in-chief at that time, and he was an activist editor-in-chief in recording the activities of the civil rights struggle. Route 40 notwithstanding, where we had the police, dogs, and others standing outside of restaurants on Route 40 to deter demonstrations. African ambassadors, and this is the chap that helped to make it work, you had that was a corridor for many ambassadors from newly liberated nations in Africa journeying to Washington, and they will refuse service in our restaurants, which made for an international problem for the administration, the government of the United States, and consequently that expedited the integration of public accommodation and restaurants along the Route 40 corridor, very much so.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinarily important and interesting movement. And you have this, it's at least you can say two-pronged. You have the NAACP working more in the courts. I think you can say Thurgood Marshall with the NAACP is the spearhead for the Brown versus Board of Education decision in 1954. And then you have CORE on the ground with its Gandhian pacifist approach, working on the streets, if you will. So it's two-pronged, if I understand correctly.
And also the Morgan students, the CIG. Morgan students were really important.
And what does CIG stand for? I think most people aren't aware.
The Civic Interest Group was under the leadership most of the time for Clarence Logan, who was a dynamic leader. And I was one of his lieutenants for the CIG at Morgan State College then. And he was just one of the best leaders I've ever had the distinction of working for. Remember, the CIG we were a member organization of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. So we were very much in the thick of the fray. And in 1973, we had a conference here at the Prince Hall Masonic Temple in Baltimore City, encompassing CORE. And who was with us? Well, we had Martin Luther King Jr. We had Stokely Carmichael. He hadn't changed his name at that time. He became Kwame Ture, but he was Stokely Carmichael at that point in time. They had a regional conference here, which planned the strategies for the civil rights movement up and down the East Coast and throughout the country. And let me give Juanita Jackson Mitchell a hand clap. The attorney Juanita Jackson Mitchell arranged with the powers that be as head of the NAACP a procedure, the reading of the trespass order in Baltimore City during the sit-ins. So that before they could arrest you, they had to read you a text about trespassing, and you had the option of disobeying this trespass order that's read to you or going to jail because you're sitting in a restaurant that is Jim Crow. They don't want you there. So again, there was a lot of cooperation, a lot of unity, and don't forget the name also, and you can look this up at the Black museums historically, but she's at the top. Gloria Richardson. Does that name ring a bell? Gloria Richardson, head of the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Group on the Eastern Shore of Maryland in Dorchester County. What a great queen. You'll see her in the National African American Museum in Washington, D.C. You'll see pictures of her pushing National Guardsmen who have bayonets, fixed bayonets, away from her face to say to her demonstrators in the Eastern Shore, we're going to proceed. We had a terrible conflagration on the Eastern Shore. No deaths that I can recall. Nobody killed, but we had folks who were beat up and injured. And the reason we didn't have deaths is because I have to say, in my opinion, that the Maryland State Police, as Jim Crowed as some of them were more focused on preventing violence than any police force at that particular point in time. Again, I have to take my hat off to the Maryland State Police.
Interesting. Any thoughts on that, Amy? And then we need to go to a little fundraising break.
Yeah, and there's a wonderful exhibit now at the Maryland Center for History and Culture on that whole era, and there's a good exhibit about Gloria Richardson and the Eastern Shore movement, which was very.
Now, what is this? Where is this in Baltimore?
Yeah, it used to be called the Maryland Historical Society. It's called the Maryland Society for History and Culture, the Center for History and Culture. It's near the Walters Art Gallery, near the area where the Washington Monument is in that part of Baltimore. And it's a really wonderful exhibit on that whole era of civil rights history.
I'm learning as we go here. I hadn't even heard of that institution. I know about the Lewis Museum, but it's important information that you guys are imparting.
Right. Well, the other museum, of course, is the Lewis Museum of African American History and Culture, and they have a whole exhibit on the protests in the 1960s as well.
Which is how I found you all through the Reginald Lewis Museum. It's just extraordinary resource in
Now you say that you feel badly that you didn't know about this 1955 sit-in at the Reed's drugstore, you know, and you saw yourself as being a well-informed person. Well, I grew up in Baltimore and I was living there then at that time, and I didn't know about it either.
And oh wow!
It was not as Leo Burrows pointed out, the press coverage wasn't that much, and as a young person, I guess I wasn't reading the newspapers as much as I read them now. So I didn't learn about all this until 2008, when I read a really wonderful book that I would recommend if anybody is interested. It's called Here Lies Jim Crow, and that's where I learned about the protests, and also about the little girl who desegregated Gwin Oak Amusement Park on August 28th, 1963. And that's how I wound up writing that book and another book as well. So then once you start learning this information, then you keep learning more and more and more.
Right. It's extraordinary. It's wonderful. We should say that the amusement park, Gwin Oak Amusement Park, is no more, but the carousel from that park is sitting on the National Mall and here. Well,
not now, right? Actually, they took it off last year for repair and refurbishment, and to a carousel refurbishing organization in Ohio. But they say it's going to be back either this year or next year, and it's definitely going to be back in time for the big celebrations of the 1776. So,
Something, I forgot to give credit to the Interdenominational Ministers Alliance.
Right, that's right. They were important too.
They were a big part, Brother Raven, a big part of this fight. In fact, they allowed me on several occasions to act as a spokesman for both organizations, the CORE and the Civic Interest Group, and the Interdenominational Ministers Alliance was headed up by Reverend Marion Bascom and Reverend Sidney Daniels, Reverend Robert Newbold, Reverend Frank Williams. These were great activists in our city, and the church, the Black church, was really the activist anchor and banner and successful lead by which we were able to accomplish much. I don't see as much coming forth from the churches today as was in the 50s and 60s, but at that point in time, we had churches that were far more activist and were consistent with the social reform movement inspired by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as advocates in civil rights. And we need to bring that back to the extent that we're able.
Yep, yep. It's so important. That's a really important point that you're making, that you don't see the same support right now from the clergy that we had back in the day in the heat of the civil rights movement. We're going to take a quick break for fundraising. I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Ray Valencia. What do you think, Ray? It's a wonderful information we're getting from our guests here, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a really important history. And you know, I didn't know about this sit-in either. I think it's good work to shine a light on this. And this is a good time. And this is why we are reaching out to our listeners, because it's programming like this that keeps us going. I mean, this is the kind of story that we feel is important. It's Black History Month. We need to understand more of our history, particularly now, you know, when we have an administration that's trying to root out so much diversity and things at the workplace and educational settings and in the community. I think we really need to kind of embrace each other. Anyway, this is the time, you know, to pick up the phone. I know you've been thinking about it. We need you. We're all stakeholders in this project, and we really appreciate you so much. Please visit us at WPFWFM.org to make your donation. Or you could call us, right, David?
That's right, 202-588-9739 is the number to call. If you want to do it via the phone, you can also do Cash App, $WPFWFM. It's a wonderful way to give. You care to give, it's important that you give one way or the other. You have another option of texting us at WPFWFM to 801-801. And I want to get back to our guests. We just have a few minutes left. I think people would be very interested to hear from both of you coming out of your extraordinary experience on the ground and historically. You know, what people should be doing now? What's your advice? Why don't we go to Leo Burroughs first? I mean, we're in dangerous times. We have, you know, I think it's pretty clear an authoritarian-oriented administration in the White House. Leo Burroughs, why don't we start with you? What do you recommend people do?
Well, technically, I'm Leo W. Burroughs, Jr. My father always said, you tell them you're a junior. Let me just say that we are under threat in ways in this country today that we've never been before. It's never been good, not for African-Americans or for other so-called minorities, but this is a capitalistic, MAGA, fascist, extremist regime under the tutelage and direction of Donald Trump, the actor Trump. We need to focus on a national strike agenda, a work stoppage and national strike, which encompasses selective buying campaigns or boycotts, as you will. And we need to struggle through sacrifice and pain, because it's going to be painful and sacrificial, to boycott for periods of time. And of course, have it set it up in a structured way. I'm talking about making demands, for example, for the restoration of all federal agencies and departments that have been obliterated by this blitzkrieg of firing under the executive orders of this madman who's president. We need to force the voting rights, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, to come into existence, to make it work. All of that is extremely important. The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act was never enacted. So we're in danger. Our democracy is in danger of falling. This country is in danger of falling. We have to become confrontational. Do I advocate civil disobedience Yes, I do. If we have to shut down Washington and other places, we'll give ample warning so folks can stock up on whatever they need to stock up on, water and non-perishables. But we've got to go to the streets and to the courts. We're in the courts. Thousands of lawsuits have been filed. But my fear is that these lawsuits may not be adjudicated for the next year or more. Meanwhile, right. We'll starve to death. We'll starve to death if we don't fight now and force a resolution in the direction that it should be, the resolution for justice and decency and fair play.
Yep, you're here. Amy, Nathan, your thoughts about, in the historical context, about what needs to happen right now.
Well, I think that it's optimistic that there have been all these lawsuits on various different fronts that are being filed. And being careful that things aren't done that will harm the health of the American people with some of the cuts that are being made now in the NIH and in medical research. That's something that my husband is involved in that, and it's kind of shocking kind of things. But there have been some article today about that in the New York Times, and I think that what worked in the civil rights movement was the nonviolent strategy, and to be able to have the high road in whatever you're doing, which is the strategy that Leo Burrows followed in the 1960s and 70s.
Yep. We're going to have to end it there. I want to thank you both so much for joining us today. I've been speaking with Amy Nathan, and she's the author of Round and Round Together, Taking a Merry-Go-Round Ride into the Civil Rights Movement, and longtime activist. And I don't mean that in the past. He sounds like he's an activist right now. Leo Burrows in Baltimore. Thank you both so much for all you're doing and for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's a great combination.
Yeah, thank you very much. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Really appreciate it. And we are at the end of our show, but I should say that we are, as you very well know, whether you like it or not, in fundraising mode. Please chime in with your support for this wonderful resource as WPFW. We are in dire straits, as always, and could really use your support. Whatever you can give would be much, much appreciated. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. You can give online WPFWFM.org with your credit card, your debit card. PayPal also works. You can call in 202-588-9739. We have Cash App, $WPFWFM. That's one way to do it. And lastly, but not least, is you can now text us, WPFWFM, to 801-801. No amount is too large. No amount is too small. You know, give up. You don't even have to give it up. Just, $10 a month would be so appreciated. The sustainers are more than welcome. And, as we are hoping to change the landscape one broadcast at a time, and your support is very, very much appreciated. I think we're bringing you a kind of information, a kind of programming that you're not hearing anywhere else. I mean, just look at the program that we just did, a wonderful activist and a wonderful historian talking about a much needed historical perspective that lends insights and paths to action for what we're dealing with right now, which I think we can say is very very dire. And part of that resistance is, I think, supporting this station, this resource, this community resource that is WPFW. So please chime in. However much you can give would be really appreciated. I know it's not necessarily all that enjoyable to listen to our fundraising drives, but by God, you know, you're not inundated with commercials on this station. You're hearing wonderful information. You're getting extraordinary music that you're not hearing anywhere else. So please support the station. And I am out. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Mike Nocella, for pulling us through. And stay tuned for Lady Murr. And don't forget the blues. Wonderful program with wonderful music. Be well. Stay safe. Take care. We'll see you next week. I'm Dave Rabin. Over and out.
Tell the truth about displacement, apartheid, and genocide, or our commitment to presenting jazz and all of its extensions, as well as other liberatory musical forms, blues, hip-hop, house. WPFW has been an unwavering partner in the fight for social justice and the preservation of the culture. Now's the time for you to display your courage and commitment to truly independent press by donating during our Winter Pledge Drive from February 9th through the 22nd. It is with your generous financial support that WPFW, this emancipatory educational media outlet, continues to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org. or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Climate Friday host Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr. is but one of the black voices in climate and environmental justice that will be featured at this year's Taking Nature Black Conference, March 5th through the 8th. Presented by Nature Forward and themed Reclamation and Resilience, with both online and in-person participation for connection, knowledge, inspiration, and more. Details about Taking Nature Black Conference at natureforward.org/takingnatureblack, all one word, Taking Nature Black. That's Taking Nature Black, Reclamation and Resilience, March 5th through the 8th. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application